You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc.
What do you mean, Jay? There's a Jay and Beyonce album?
The Carters.
The Carters.
Come on, Doc. Everything is love.
Love everything. Wasn't that what Kanye was going to call his album?
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Saturday, just as I'm heading to dinner.
Yep.
I get the text, I get the super secret. No, it's just Armand texting me. I get the text. It's the link to Tidal. And I look at that and I was like, huh.
Yep.
Because it's been rumored for a while.
For years.
Right. It's been rumored. They're on tour.
Uh-huh.
But the timing seemed a little weird to me.
You think that would happen before they would go on tour, right?
I got three reasons why it's weird. Number one, before you go on tour or after or whatever. But I don't know, something. But yeah, actually, before you go on tour. Number two, in the middle of June, which is packed full of other high profile releases.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, they dropped on a Saturday night, which mm-hmm. I know Beyonce did with Lemonade.
Mm-hmm.
But like, when you have a lot of other stuff going on and a lot of other big releases, you need to drop Friday morning so you can get all your streams and sales counted so you can go number one
mm-hmm.
and have a big opening week.
Mm-hmm.
Dropping on Saturday night is kind of silly in a sense. But we'll talk about streaming and numbers and everything else because there's some interesting stuff happening here. But I was really surprised, actually. I hadn't really heard. Had you heard any like whispers that this was like coming soon or anything?
No, I had no idea.
I was reading an interview with, I think, Dre from Cool and Dre today,
uh-huh,
where
uh-huh.
basically they were prepping for the album for the tour in Paris.
Uh huh.
And they flew, and Cool and Dre just flew out there, and because they did Summer, they did 713.
713, and they did
Black Effect.
Yep.
And so they just like flew out there and stayed there and did whatever. And like, that was kind of like the wrapping up this project or whatever. But, you know, no disrespect to Cool and Dre, not the most high profile producers anymore. So it's not like,
right.
It's not like, oh, Pharrell flew out to whatever. You know what I mean? It's not like something we might've heard. So they were able to kind of fly under the radar a little bit. Right.
Yep.
There's a song not on the album that is also on Tidal called Salud.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure why it's not on the album, but sure, why not? And do you have anything else you want to say before we start going track by track?
Nah, I think everything is in the music.
I think everything's in the music too. So all tracks here are labeled as produced by Beyonce and Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll talk about the additional production as such. And I want to talk about this up front because I think this is a really interesting thing, right? So for a long time, Beyonce has been like listed as a producer or co-producer on her projects.
Mm-hmm.
And for R&B, there is the notion of not just producing the song, but like producing the vocals, right? Like arranging the vocals.
Right.
So much so that like Rihanna has a person who like always like shows up as a co-producer for her because he's the person who arranges her vocals almost always. So like, I sort of always chalk that up to, oh, like Beyonce is like obviously sharing ideas in the studio and whatever else, but it's mainly about like she produces her vocals. And Jay got like co-production credit on 444. But I think the story at the time was it's because he picked all the samples, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But like, and when we get to the single, we'll talk about it. Like, I'm not really sure. I have to say, I'm a little questioning how much production is going on here by Beyonce and Jay-Z, but, you know, it's all good.
You would have to define, I guess my question is like, what is production?
Right. Because like, we get it. Like, there's the Quincy Jones style, Puff Daddy style, where it's like, turn this down, turn this up.
Yep.
Change this, do this instead, which is true. But like, when we talk about Ape, right? When we talk about Ape-ish with Offset and Quavo, we're like, we've all heard, well, we'll talk about it in a second, but like that song makes me go, now wait just a minute here. But anyway, let's talk about track one, Summer, produced by Cool and Dre, and I think is it L. Michaels?
Sure.
They did that project, was it with GZA, like 10 years or so ago, where it was like live instrumentation and Wu-Tang beats or something like that? You remember that?
Nope.
it was called the L. Michaels Affair. They did a bunch. They like played like, yeah, Enter the 37th Chamber is what it was called. They basically played like a bunch of like old school RZA beats with instrumentation. Anyway, how do you feel about Summer?
I like this record a lot. This beat is crazy.
I like the production, you know, obviously very lush, soulful. So shout out to Cool and Dre. I didn't really need Jay doing his ad-libs on Beyonce's part.
That's a running theme on this album where they're ad-libbing each other's verses.
Yeah. I think Jay is good here.
I think that's going to be a consistent theme throughout this album.
I'm not in love with his flow 100% on this, but I think he's fine on it. And I think this is a nice little opener.
Yeah. This is how you open up an album slowly. Yes. Right? So yes. If we're talking about opening up an album with everything, like everything is heavy. It's heavy slow. This is more of a rolling like opening credits. So it's hard, but it's slow, but it's not plotting. And then there's a drum roll at the end of the beat, and it comes back and Beyonce singing really hard, and yeah. Like, this is a really good opener for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, I like Summer. It's a good record.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just get right to it. Let's talk about the single. Ape-ish, I'll say, featuring Offset and Quavo. I'm giving them credit for their ad-libs. Produced by Pharrell. This is the single. I don't understand what people are seeing in this song. Am I missing something? Because people are, like, if you read reviews online, you would think this is, like, the song of the summer, practically.
I got it today.
Okay, help me out, because like this beat is super underwhelming.
It is.
Okay.
People like what the kids are doing.
Oh, do they ever? They like rapping about Philippe Patek watches?
Well, no, what I'm saying is like, shut up. what I mean is people like,
oh,
like
I know what you
the
mean.
Drums, people like the flows, the cadences, but what it's generally used for is very childish.
Mm.
So with Jay and Beyonce, you're getting a level of sophistication, even if it's not necessarily deep. It's something that maybe more people can relate to, as opposed to it just being dismissed as this is like for the kids. So it's a way to enjoy what the kids are doing without like dealing with the kids. It's eating the kids' fruit snacks after they go to grandma's house.
Right. It's a way to show that you're with it.
I mean, and not even just the show. I think people just enjoy it. I think people like the Migos music, but you can only listen to it for so long. But if you got two people whose musical catalog that you trust, it's different coming from them. It's the same sound coming from a different messenger, and it works.
Can we slow our roll just a little bit about Beyonce becoming the greatest rapper alive?
Beyonce has been dying to make a trap album.
Yes.
Dying.
But like, people need to slow down just a little bit. This is a running theme of this album. Like, it's getting really hard when talking about Jay-Z and Beyonce music for me to separate the music from their fandom.
You gotta, anytime Jay does anything, I'm reminded that I follow too many people from New York. But with that being said, I really, really, really like him on this album.
I really like him on this song. I think he's flowing really nice. Like, he has urgency on this song.
He has urgency throughout this project.
I think
lyrically and cadence wise.
I think that's pretty fair to say. I just don't like. I think this beat. I mean, I can't believe Pharrell. I mean, hey, whatever works.
I can't.
This is so mediocre.
Well, it's interesting because I need to know credits, because the other Pharrell record, what is the Neptune? Because I'm thinking like, all
that's
right.
It's just Pharrell.
Right. And it's clear. And that's been my biggest critique of Pharrell, is like Pharrell needs other people, because when it's just Pharrell, he thinks everything he does is amazing. It's like the Neptunes. There's Pharrell production and there's the Neptunes production.
Yeah.
When Chad left, there was a distinction, and that distinction wasn't always good.
Mm.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Ape-ish is it's a good song, but I'm not crazy about it. I'll say that.
And the video, people are rushing to write their hot takes about how the video is like a revolutionary accomplishment, because it's, you know, this very wealthy and successful black couple in the Louvre, right? Which is like very famously full of like primarily white European artists, colonial artifacts, etc. And people are really like stretching to like make it seem like a thing. And it's like they're flexing, which is fine. That's like what hip hop does. But they're flexing, right?
Yeah.
But people need to relax.
Here's my problem with that. Black excellence, just as the term, uh-huh. should not always be predicated on white people.
Hmm.
I hate that it's a big deal that they are in this institution that normally white people have occupied. I don't care. Like, you can be excellent outside of doing that. I get it. Right. You're right. It's the flex. But it seems like it's a bigger deal because they're in this space versus it being a big deal because they did something independently of themselves. But that's not just Jay and Beyonce thing. I think that's just an overall sentiment that I'm seeing from African Americans. Like, even a critique on Jay has always been how he compares himself to white people. Like, I'm the black James Dean, the black Madonna. Like, how come you just can't, like, why don't you? If you're gonna come, yeah, Rockefeller. If you're gonna compare yourself, like, there are amazing African Americans. There are amazing Africans that have preceded you. Like,
I think it's because for Jay, I mean, and look, Jay and Beyonce make it very clear all across this album. This was the theme of 444 that I very notably, and to many people's chagrin, like, did not really appreciate when I heard it. Like, Jay equals, like, equates capitalist excellence with black excellence, right?
Yeah.
And like, historically, if you think that like capitalistic excellence is like, that's the thing, you're going to compare yourself to a bunch of white guys, because in America, that's who has been allowed to flourish and make money previously.
Sure. I get you. I hear you.
Okay.
Hey.
Let's talk about Boss, featuring Ty Dolla $ign.
Yep.
Produced by a whole bunch of people had their hands in this. Damarel, Mike Dean, Mello X, who's produced for Beyonce before. I kind of like this beat. I think the live horns give it a nice touch. The hook is, I'm good with people calling themselves Boss, but like, it tries to get in your head, which is exactly what a hook's supposed to do. But I kind of like this. I like the beat anyway.
Yeah. I think this is another well-written song.
Mm.
I'm not crazy about it, but it's just put together really, really well.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to sound like the grouchy guy. Like, I just, you know, it only takes so much of hearing about like how great Tidal is and how rich Jay and Beyonce are. And there's a couple songs, not all songs, there's a couple songs in this album where they fall back on that, you know?
But I think that was the flex to your point earlier about putting the album out on Saturday, because Beyonce mentioned it in this song. Like, I don't, you know, if I was worried about Spotify numbers, I would have put Lemonade on there. If I was worried about numbers, I would have put Lemonade on it.
And then on Monday, they promptly put the album on Spotify.
Well, sure.
Okay, just making sure.
But I don't know if people, I don't know. Whatever.
Let's talk about Nice, produced by Pharrell, okay. Featuring Pharrell. This beat is so dope. Oh, man. These piano chords, I knew immediately it was Pharrell.
Oh, I knew it from the drums.
Oh, interesting. I heard those chords and I was like, Pharrell. Jay has energy on this.
Yep.
The hook gets in your head. This is absolutely my favorite song on the album.
Really? Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pharrell's great on this. Yeah, I'm 100% in on this song.
It was really interesting to hear Pharrell get on. Like, Pharrell's gonna get his writing credits.
Yes, he is.
He's going to end up on a song somehow. Like, he's gonna do it. It's cool. This is okay.
Huh?
Like, it's not my runaway favorite. It's not my. But anytime I turn on the radio, I'm hearing this record.
Really?
The radio is playing this. They're playing Ape-ish and they're playing Friends.
That's interesting. We'll talk about Friends in a minute.
So you know why they're playing Friends. We'll get there.
But yeah, I don't know. I think the beat for Nice is just, yeah, right in there. And Jay sounds great on it.
Okay.
All right. 713, produced by Kool & Dre and 808 Ray. I was not expecting to hear the trademark, this is like Kool & Dre opener in 2018. I also wasn't expecting to hear auto-tune Beyonce. And yeah. I wasn't expecting to hear Beyonce reusing the Still DRE hook.
Yeah, that was like a mind screw, because it's like you're using the lyrics that your husband wrote for somebody else, right. That's crazy. This beat is crazy.
I think the beat is good.
Nah, the beat is super dope.
Well, you like it because it's a Hiatus Coyote sample.
Not even that. I didn't know it was a Hiatus Coyote sample until like later. I love the drums.
I don't really like the drums. I think there's something about this beat that stops it from being amazing to me for some reason. Like, I want to really like this beat, but like, I'm just like, nah, it's good. It's a good beat.
So I think that for people who said this is a Beyonce album featuring Jay-Z,
which much of it is.
Yeah, I think this is one of the records that is clearly Jay featuring Beyonce.
Mm.
And it works.
I think that's
it works,
fair.
It works for Jay, and Jay kind of needs that space. So I like this record. This record is super dope.
I think it's good. I think it's fine. So, so Friends, produced by the Toronto Stimulus Package, a.k.a. Boy Wonder, Seven, Nav. Miles? Nope, he comes later. And Jahan Sweet.
Nav.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about Nav on this show. We probably never will, right?
Except for this. This beat is fine. And the hook to me is like 100% forgettable, but I know what they're doing.
Oh, 100%. This is super in my bag layup. Like, this is Instagram captions for the rest of the year.
Right.
Yep.
Right. This is friend talking about friend goals. Yeah, I get it. There is something kind of funny about the two of them going to get the Toronto Stimulus Package for a song that's basically about how they keep their friend group closer.
Yeah.
I think this song is fine.
Yeah, it's cool. People really like this Jay verse.
Interesting. I thought he was okay.
People like it because he's talking about Kanye. And I think people enjoy bragging about cutting people off.
That's interesting.
And bragging about having friends. Like, I'm 30, I have friends. I think the sentiment of this verse is what people really like. Like, it's a good verse. I think the sentiment is what carries it for a lot of people. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Continuing the Toronto Stimulus Package, we have Heard About Us, produced by Boy Wonder, again Jahan Sweet, Vinyls, and Illmind.
Okay. Yep.
I like that this song kind of throws you off at first.
I love this record.
I knew you would, because when Beyonce starts, you would almost think by her cadence that it's going to be a trap beat.
Yep.
But then the beat drops and you're like, oh, we're going to two-step.
Yep.
I would have sworn to you when I heard that two-step beat, I was like, I wonder if Tarius Nash had something to do with this, but not at all.
Yeah.
I never would have guessed this from Boy Wonder and Vinyls.
Yeah.
I think this is a good tempo for Jay to rap on.
Yep.
I don't think he's like breaking new ground here, but I think the verse totally works. And I think this is a nice little hook. And it's a good tempo. This is just a good song.
This is one of my favorites. Yep.
Yeah. I You can just throw this on and people can be dancing, you know.
I love the melody.
Yeah. Yeah.
The melody, the beat is crazy. Yep. I love it. I think this is one of the more underrated records in terms of like response. People love Ape-ish. People love Friends. People love Love Happy. But to me, this is the super underrated, underappreciated, under the radar record. This record is dope.
I think a beat that's underappreciated is Black Effect.
Woo! No, I don't think it's underappreciated. It's not underappreciated by people I know.
Okay. Produced by Kool & Dre. Fantastic sample.
Oh my God.
This beat 1,000% works. The concept for the song is super interesting.
Okay.
I don't want to ask this question because then it makes you out to be like the African-American representative on the show. But like, in what world? Because this song is, I mean, I hear the song and I hear two people who are feeling defensive about how authentically black they are.
Mm-hmm.
Who do people think that?
What? That?
Like, in what world do I think that Jay-Z is not good on any MLK Boulevard?
Oh, that's a flex. That's a flex.
No, I mean, this whole song is about, I mean, by the way, I just, every time Beyonce yells out, I'm Malcolm X, I just completely like... It's like, what are you doing?
She's just talking cash.
Yeah,
she's talking cash money. Yeah, she's talking cash. She's been wanting to do this forever.
Like, this song is a flex, but it's a
it's a racial flex.
It's not even that. It's like it's an insecure flex.
Nah,
you don't think so?
Nah,
because rappers do that all the time.
They do.
Okay,
that's and we talked about Jay.
It felt really strange to me.
We talked about Jay's insecurities on the show. I don't think they show up here, though.
Okay.
I think this is just, I'm black and I'm going to rap about it. I didn't look any deeper into that. And like this, and this beat is so fire. Like,
yeah,
I think
the beat carries this so much.
I wouldn't call it carry, because I think, again, Jay does his thing, and we're going to talk about Jay rapping in a second. Actually, let's just talk about it now. Like, sure. But I don't think it's a carry. I think what it does for people like us, this is our break on the album. So we've established that this is primarily a Beyoncé album. So if you are riding with your girl, and there's a good chance that your girl is a Beyoncé fan, like she loves Beyoncé, so she wants to hear this album. She has this album on repeat because she wants to learn all the lyrics, because you guys are going to On the Run 2 and 3 weeks, and she wants to sing along to every single verse. This is your break. This is your, all right, like, I'm going to deal with this Beyoncé album because I get Black Effect. And this is the Jay-Z that I want.
Mm.
It works. For those, because, okay, you had a lot of critique for the way that Jay was rapping on 444.
I think he's rapping way better on this album.
That's what I'm saying. So,
way better.
So what? So my point is that it does give credence to the, I wanted it to feel like a conscious thought. I didn't really put a lot of effort in. Like, I just wanted to record these verses and get them out. Because then we were like, okay, well, maybe he hasn't fallen off, because there's records like Smile. There's records like, oh my God, what's that other record? Marcy Me, where he is in a serious rappity rap pocket. On this album consistently, and then ending with Black Excellence, because I think Love Happy is just a completely different record. Ending with, no, I'm sorry, not Black Excellence, Black Effect. Jay is consistently in a really, really, really good pocket. So for you to be rapping for 22 years consistently, and you still have this pocket, you're taking the young kids flow, but you're still like rapping, wordplay, whatever, whatever. And that the wordplay I was talking about earlier was on Friends, when he was like, y'all like the triangles and all that stuff. Like, that's super smack DVD from 2004. Jay impressed me with his rapping on this album consistently. He is killing these verses. The wordplay is there. The cadence is there. The flow is there. The urgency is there. Jay-Z at 48, however old he is right now, should not be rapping as good as he is on this project. For me, that's the biggest takeaway. So I'm happy with it. But yeah, Black Effect is fire. Love this record.
And then we get to Love Happy.
Love Happy.
Produced by this guy, Dave Sitek from TV on the Radio, which is not a band we've ever really talked about on the show because they don't do hip hop. This drove me crazy all weekend. I tweeted about this. This is the same sample as Killer Mike's Ric Flair.
I've gotten quite a few text messages about this song.
This is a dope beat.
Beat is dope.
In terms of the concept of the song, I get it. Like, this is the story that you have to close this album out with.
Absolutely.
Like, I hope for them that this is real.
Here you go.
What did we just talk about earlier? Whatever side this is now, I don't know. We're like 2 hours and 45 minutes in this conversation.
Side F.
Yeah. Nothing in life is as neat as we all want it to be, right? And Jay and Beyonce, while they have decided to let people in a little bit, but like, this is not the unfiltered story, which is fine.
It shouldn't be.
Right. That's what you and I would say. We're in our 30s, right? Yeah. Right. But like, do their fans know that?
I think. I've seen Beyonce fans begrudgingly forgive Jay for this album. I think if you make Lemonade, you have to do this. You have to do this. This ends the this is the trilogy that we didn't know we were getting. We got Beyonce's side, we got Jay's side, and now we have them coming together. Empowerment, right. Goals.
Right, right. This right. They're just trying to. Right. It's all hashtag goals. Right. And it's like, so this is. I don't know. I think this is a really good lesson to artists about the kind of transparency that you can be successful with.
Mm, okay, break that down.
I think it takes a lot. I mean, look, you got to give Beyonce and Jay a lot of credit because they've clearly worked their way through challenges in their marriage. And even if you think that they are putting a nice sheen on this.
And you do.
I don't know how you can't. This is not what real life is, right? Real life is not. First, we have the setup with Lemonade. Then we have the confession, and now they're all happy again. Like, that's not how life works. But that's the story that they're telling, right? Now I lost track of what I was talking about.
Sorry.
Been out of shape. Fine. It's fine. But like
you were talking about this is the way for
is what I was like, we were talking about this before. Like, you know, Kanye went like all the way in, right? Unfiltered, saying whatever he wants, going off on the mouth on Twitter in a way that, like, even putting aside whatever mental illness he may or may not have, or what he may or may not have been diagnosed with, like, Jay and Beyonce would never be unfiltered on Twitter,
ever,
like, showing up to TMZ in that way, like, never, ever in their life, right?
Ever.
And I don't think fans, at least as it exists right now, this younger generation might prove us wrong eventually, but they're not there in numbers yet. But for the masses who are listening to this kind of music, they are not ready for that. But what they do want is they want to know more, right? You can't close yourself off the way Nas has.
Yeah.
But you can't mouth off, as people have sort of interpreted, or you can't just go say whatever you want like Kanye has, unless you're willing to lose people.
Yeah, agreed.
But you can do something, right? And people are now expecting something, right? Like, because I think about, like, the critiques about, like, Nas's album. Like, people are like, well, he didn't really talk about the thing with Khalees. Yeah. And you know how mad they would have been if he would have said, nah, she's a lion.
Yep.
Right? People would have been like, no, what people wanted was the story. People wanted the good story. They wanted him to be, oh, I made a terrible mistake, or I've made mistakes in my past. That's what they wanted. They wanted their own idea of what it would mean to be woke or to be a better person. They don't actually want the truth.
Right.
So I don't think people want the truth. And so I don't blame Jay and Beyonce at all for selling to people. That's what they do. Beyonce has been selling an image of herself since she was what, 15?
I think.
And Jay is the guy who famously always sold us. Always. That's what he does. And that's fine. I think that's totally fine. I just want to be upfront about it.
They're not going to be upfront about. Okay, so if your theory is true, they're not going to be upfront about it because that's part of the selling.
No, as a fan, I'm not saying them. I'm saying it's one of those things where, like, all right, so I'll use a whole other analogy. So you've dealt with people. I'm sure you've dealt with situations at work where, like, you have to have, like, one kind of conversation in public, but then you don't want to, like, embarrass people or call them out necessarily.
Absolutely.
So then you have another kind of conversation behind the scenes.
Absolutely.
Have you ever dealt with somebody who, when you try to have that conversation behind the scenes, they look at you like they don't drop the facade and they still act like everything is the same way it was in public?
Absolutely.
Right. That's what it's like to talk to hardcore Jay-Z and Beyonce fans. It's No, y'all get it, right? Like, they're selling y'all hashtag goals, and that's cool. But, like, no, you're being sold a little bit. Like, you can still buy into it. You can still love it. Am I asking too much?
I just think that sold is a really harsh word for what you're saying.
What they're doing. This is selling.
I think when you call it selling, I think you are being, like, disingenuous with it.
Am I?
I think that you are accusing them of being disingenuous. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh. Okay. I am.
See, I don't think that omitting information and presenting it in a way is necessarily disingenuous. It goes back to the Drake point. I don't need to know that Drake has, you know, Drake has a kid. Just like I don't need to know the inner workings and the details of their marriage issues. I do think, I'll say this, my critique of Jay on the Friends verse is, don't do an interview and say, oh yeah, Kanye's like my little brother and we just fight and, you know, we'll be fine. And then on the Friends verse be like, I ain't going to nobody, nothing to me and my wife beefing. To essentially be like, F you, buddy. Like, you're telling two totally different stories, and Jay is the king of that. I'm not celebrating that Friends verse because it's chuck full of passive aggression. My biggest knock on Jay is that he's been the king of subliminals, and the older I get, the more I hate subliminals. Mm. I would much prefer a confrontation, because all confrontation isn't bad. If I come to you with something that I don't like that you did, if we have the type of relationship that we have, then I know that you're going to hear me, or vice versa. You're going to hear me. I'm going to hear you from a place of love where it's like, okay, I've known Doc since this long. Like, I know that this isn't disingenuous. This isn't manipulative. This isn't anything bad. He has this concern. Let me hear my friend out. with Jay and Beyonce, or with Jay doing that, telling essentially two different stories about the same situation, it makes me say, ugh, he did that with Beanie. Mm. He didn't address the Beanie Siegel beef until long after people forgot about it. And when he addressed it, it was very passive aggressive. And then when you saw Jay and Beanie again, they were throwing up the rock at the B-Sides concert. Like, I guess that's the type of transparency, to your point, that maybe you want to see that people like X and this generation are doing, where you're seeing them beef. They'll get on Instagram Live, they'll talk about their issues, and then they'll do a song together like 2 weeks later. And then they'll fall out again another month after that. But I don't think for Jay and Beyonce, I don't need to know all the details. They are telling me that they're telling me all the details, but I know they're not.
Okay.
And I don't need them to tell me that they're not. I'm not tripping. I guess that's because you talked about extreme Jay fans, and I think extreme Jay fans are in extreme Beyonce fans. Good Lord. They're in the same boat with Eminem fans, Laker fans, like, were you Ohio State fans? You can't tell them anything that isn't, this person that I love is the greatest person in the world. Mm. This college that I love isn't the greatest thing in the world. I think we have learned to be a little more objective. I think you're being a little bit cynical, but
I'm super cynical about it because look at it this way, right? Like, so Jay was not faithful, but we have now come through a 3-album cycle where, you know, Jay is redeemed. He's a new man. He's, he has embraced his black queen.
Mm. Why did you say it like that?
Because that's that. Jesus, I mean, there is a lot of that running through this, right? It is. It's the same. I mean, I'm now at a point in my life where I have real issues where, like, we rely on women to be the salvation of flawed men. Mm-hmm. But that's what this is. I mean, the story that is being sold is like, man, even Beyonce can get cheated on, but you too can save your man. Like, that's the story.
I think that's corny. I don't want my significant other to save me. Like, if I cheat, if I'm being unfaithful, if I make a mistake, I would like for you to, like, persevere and support me. Right. That doesn't mean that you can't be mad. That doesn't mean that you can't wild out. Like, but if it's for better or for worse, like, you know, emphasis on for worse, you know, worse means worse. So I'm not tripping off of that, but I'm not assigned to that method that, like, we're two halves that become whole. We come together, we're two wholes, and we just are a bigger, a more whole, or it's just a whole other thing, because the marriage thing is two becoming one. So it's a whole other dynamic of learning to spend the rest of your life with this other person and what that entails. I think that's where the narrative of goals gets messy at, because the only messy you see in a marriage that people will show is, like, something major, like a cheating.
Right.
You don't see when your wife calls you and tells you to, like, she tells you to, like, take the chicken out before you go to work, and you don't, and she's mad at you for the rest of the night because now the chicken's frozen and y'all don't know what y'all are gonna eat for dinner. You know,
Don't ask Marissa about my habit of leaving dishes in the sink. Like, you don't even want to go there.
See? Just those little things that they're not glamorous.
Right.
And you can't Instagram that. But it's real. And it's much more of a reality. Because really, and that's what I was talking about with hip hop. If you want the benefits, you gotta take on the burden. If you want hashtag goals, you gotta wash your significant other's dirty drawers. You have to take everything that comes with them. When they're annoyed with you, when they're mad at you, when they're not right, when you realize how prideful and arrogant and selfish that you are, and you don't have the wherewithal to say, I'm sorry. Like, it takes you a while to get there. And, like, all these other things that go into a relationship that rarely get discussed until people get married. And they're like, well, what the heck did I get myself into? Who is this monster that I'm married to? You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't see the worst. You're just like, all right, yeah, worse. All right, let's go. Let's get on our honeymoon. Let's have a lot of sex, and then we'll buy a house, and everything will be fine. No, bunch of other stuff, but I digress. But that stuff isn't glamorous, Doc, and that's why Jay-Z and Beyonce aren't going to sell that. It doesn't look good.
No, I know that. I know. I'm going to have a lot of people get mad at me. Let me say this much. I think this is better than 444.
I think this is completely different.
I agree, but I mean,
it's better than Lemonade, because it's more of a Beyonce than a Jay-Z album to me.
That's fair. That's interesting. this is an interesting project where, like, there's nothing on here that is terrible. But to me, there aren't, there are, I don't know. I think it's a, like, it gets to a pretty good level often, but there aren't, like, a ton of spikes of, like, amazingness to me, if that makes sense.
I think that the expectations for a Jay-Z and Beyonce album were ridiculously low because of the output of Jay-Z and Beyonce songs in the past. What are the good Jay-Z and Beyonce songs? What, Drunk in Love and Crazy in Love?
Yeah.
And then everything else is like, and I guess Family Feud, like, but that's kind of just Beyonce harmonizing. But you've got Hollywood and people didn't like Deja Vu. And like, there's so many not good Jay-Z and Beyonce. Right? I mean, even Top Off is trash, right?
Top Off is terrible.
So like people, when people were saying that before 444, there was the Jay-Z and Beyonce talk. And everybody was like, please God, no. Don't put out a Jay-Z and Beyonce album. Like, we don't want it. And I think because it's well-produced, it's well-written, it's a really good Beyonce, it's a really good Jay, there's relevance there, it ties up the end of the very tragic stories of Lemonade and 444, ties it up in a neat little bow, ends it well, all the other stuff, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of other factors that go into it, but I think at the core, if we're just talking about music, it's an album. It's a consistent album and it's not a collection of songs. And I think that between the content, how it's written, how it's produced, and how they perform it, it all ends up being well. So there's not really like super, super spikes, though I think there are. They're not like, it's consistent enough for it to be a success. I wouldn't be surprised if this was on my end of the year, to be honest with you. I wouldn't be surprised. It might be like 8 or 9, but it might be on my end of the year. I like this album a lot. I'm very, very pleased and satisfied with Everything Is Love.
Okay.
Woo!
Anything else you want to say?
Man, I'm exhausted. I'm good. I got to get my kids.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to however many sides of this week's Clack Radio Speakers we have.
God bless.
please let us know what you think. Use the hashtag Clack Radio Speakers or hit us up at CRS Podcast.
We about know you will.
Any one of the 5 million things we talked about today. And I know we missed stuff. We didn't really talk about J-Rock's album. I'm sure we didn't really talk much about Summer Jam. I'm sure there's other stuff we missed. But Armand, I have no idea if we're back next week. Is there anything coming out this Friday? I mean, aside from Teyana Taylor, but I mean, unless that's like...
There'll probably be a Drake thing, but we probably won't. And I'm going out of town. Oh man, I'm out of town next week and we got the 4th of July. So we're going to have to figure out something for Scorpion.
We're going to have to find something for Scorpion. So we'll be back at some point, but hopefully this episode will hold y'all for a little bit.
It better. Shoot. It's reckless as crazy. Y'all be talking to us and then tell us to be back next week. Gotcha.
And on that note.